today we talk about air transport. This is the one before the last class. The last class is on now. So, air transport, this is 1903. So, a little more than a century ago, these were the airplanes. Wright Brothers, first flight. Then what happened? Yes, 1914, the world's first scheduled flight with paid passengers. So, yeah, just about one century ago. And it went from Tampa to St. Petersburg in Florida, so a short trip, with a fare of $10. And so, the beginning of the airline transportation. But then, the big thing, World War I. World War I means the airlines were used for, well, not so much, well, also for combat, but they were used especially for overseeing the troops, the enemy, for checking the enemy. Okay. And World War I ended, and there were people trained to be pilots, and there was a surplus on aircraft available. But the first commercial international air transport service started only in 1919, so less than a century ago, between England and France. European countries had air flights for passengers, but they were not profitable. They were very heavily subsidized. Too costly, not enough people, technology was not there yet. They were used, though, especially in the United States, for the mail, the air mail. And the mail has always been an important component, an important demand for transportation. Remember the mail with horses, with carriages, with coaches. The mail also was transported by ships. The Lloyd Triestino, the Austrian Lloyd also, had a big, made a lot of money with the mail. And the air mail, so was the main service, or the airline industry. Subsidized as the passenger airline transportation, but it was there. Then, the second big thing, World War II. So World War II, World War II, the airline travel really started taking off, starting expanding. And this is the first airplane, the Douglas DC-3, the first airliner that could fly profitably without government subsidies. When? Well, just in between and after the Second World War II, it was 21-seat airplane, so a rather small one, able to fly across the US, stopping just three times. That was quite an achievement, stopping three times between the US. And this was the main airline. So, not many people, so I guess costly and also time consuming, but better than the train, because the competition was with the train and with the car. So, faster than the other modes, of course. Then there has been some attempts of flying over the ocean. Flying over the ocean is challenging. You need big airplanes, you need a lot of fuel. And this was an in-between service with this, they are called flying boats or seaplanes. And in Italian, this is idrovolante. I don't know what's the word in Spain. Yeah, something like that. So this is a plane, a regular plane, that can land on the sea. And Trieste was one of the cities where there were actually seaplanes, idrovolanti. You see, it could land comfortably near the city center. You know what this place is, no? Near the city center. So this is on Ponte Rosso, it can land. And you can go to Torino with this plane. So fly across Italy. This is an image. This is another one by Piazza Vittorio. Of the people, of course, was very adventurous at those times to fly with this plane. And this, it still exists, this is the airline station. So this is the airport, the old airport of Trieste, with the planes landing by the shore. And you can go to Torino. But here's the big thing. The big thing is the Boeing 707, much larger plane, much bigger plane, and here we are 1956, and finally this was able to carry many people, and so in 1966 more people traveled on intercity routes by air than by Pullman cars, so coaches, sleepers, or coach class trains combined in the US. So this is when the airline industry overcome the bus and train industry for intercity travels in the US. 1958, airlines carried more passengers than ocean liners across the Atlantic for the first time. So 1958, more people by air than by ship between Europe and the United States. Okay. So this is actually the beginning commercial large volumes of traffic internally and internationally. Okay. The 707 and other early jets, especially the DC-8, double the speed. So from 350 miles per hour to 580 miles per hour. So traveling times much reduced. And this is the Boeing 747 is the most successful airplane ever built. This had a passenger capacity, a passenger capacity I guess more than 500 people. We'll see it in a moment. Passengers capacity, seating capacity of 400 people, 416 people. Okay. The beginning was 385, 400, about 400 people. And this plane held the passenger capacity record for 37 years. So this was for 37 years the largest plane ever built. Okay, so maybe you are familiar with this kind of planes if you travel across the Atlantic. And so this is a list of the main airplanes. So let's see what happened. So the speed, the Douglas DC-3 300, then 20 years later 500, then 10 years later 900, and we are now able to fly 1,000 kilometers per hour. So the speed increased by 3 times. The speed, of course, is crucial. No? The speed is time. Time is costly. Nobody wants to stay longer along in a trip, so speed is crucial. Range is also important. It was quite short at the beginning, 500 kilometers. And it sharply increased over the years, and now, well, starting from the 90s, we are at 14,000 kilometers of range. So I guess this is more than enough for the travels, the transatlantic travels that we usually make, the international travels that we usually make. Seat capacity. Seat capacity started slow, but yes, this is the big jump, 747, 400. And then seat capacity, well, it did not increase that much. The Airbus A308 has 550, and this newer one is very fast, and with this huge range one has only a fifth capacity of 250. Why is that so? Because an airplane is profitable only if it is full, if it has a lot of people in it. So there is no point of having a very big airplane if then you are not able to fill it up. And fill up an airplane is not easy, because you have to get the people that want to fly on that airplane that day, in that precise moment between those precise cities. So the airlines have always struggled with the loading the airplane. Up to the 80s, well, even 90s, airplanes were half empty. I remember flying to the US my first time in the 80s, and I was surprised. The airplane was almost empty. It was maybe 30%, 40% of the people. So what's the point of having such a huge airplane if it is not full? That's why they didn't push that much on this aspect. And the average load capacity of the airplanes is estimated to be about 60%. So 60% was considered, well, a good result. So not much. And in fact, yes, this is the seat capacity between the 70s and the year 2000. And you can see that seat capacity, these are the pre-85 models. Yeah, 400, and this is the post-85, so between 85 and 2000. These are the most used airplanes. They actually decreased. Most of the airplanes that we take nowadays, the ones that we take more frequently, are less than 300 seats. so the improvement has not been size and seats, the improvement has been in something else. What has been the big improvement? The big improvement has been in fuel efficiency. So we have we use smaller airplanes, but let's jump on this one. The fuel efficiency is very, very much improved. This is the fuel efficiency over the years on some of these airplanes. And you see that the curve is drastically declining. From the 60s to the 70s, it dropped 50%. Then it's rather stable, it's a little bit, So, fuel efficiency is the crucial factor. Well, fuel efficiency means, since, again, I have it somewhere, fuel efficiency is about 40% of the cost of an airplane. So 40% is a lot. So if you are able to halve the fuel consumption, then you are able to decrease very largely the ticket that you are, that the fares that you are going to ask in order to be profitable. Huh? And yes, fuel efficiency improved very much. And why did it improve? Mostly the engine technology. Engine fuel per unit of thrust. So engine technology is very much improved. Aerodynamics also contributed, 25%. And economies of scale, yeah, but not much. So it's not like in the ships. In the ships we have seen that the larger the ship is, the lower is the consumption, the fuel consumption. Here, this is not the case. The fuel efficiency comes from the engines. So having the right size engine is much more important than having a larger airplane, a bigger airplane. Aerodynamics, 25%, yeah. And in terms of the aerodynamics, we had at some point, so this was between the 90s and 2003, we had at one point an experiment with a very fast and very nice and aerodynamic airplane, the Concorde, was an Anglo-French airplane. Very fast, twice the speed of sound. So very fast. It flew between the main capitals, so it was Paris, New York, or London, New York. But could carry only a quarter as many passengers and had a range of more than 3,000 kilometers shorter. So it was very fast. I don't know in terms of efficiency, but it didn't carry enough passengers, and at the end, this was a failure. The company went bankrupt, they grounded, so they closed this line in 2003.
There was an accident, if I remember.
Yeah, there was also maybe an accident, yeah, I think I remember, but the main reason is poor economy. So the nature of speed, size, consumption, unfortunately, was not good. So this was not. So even that proves that even the best technology, in some sense, if it is not best overall, in economic sense, then it doesn't work. Well, of course, as we know, world air travel very, very sharply rising. both in terms of passengers and in terms of freight. Billions of passengers can also very, very fast increase. Increase in fuel efficiency. Yes, what about the costs, the jet fuel prices? The jet fuel prices in the 90s were rather stable, but then there's been huge fluctuations. So increase, then decrease, increase. Yes, so fuel is about 40 to 50% of the cost, and the cost fluctuates, and this is a very important factor for the profitability of the airlines. This is something that we'll discuss later. Profitability, as in the ships, is determined by these cycles in the fuel prices. So I expect that also in the airline industry, the profitability of the industry, expect that here declines because costs are too large, then it increases, and then it declines, and so on. What happened to the airfare, the ticket, the ticket that we pay for airplanes? Well, that's also, as you see, it went down very sharply. This is the airfare round trip ticket between New York and London between 1946 and 2004. So, huge decline. Luckily for us, because we are able to fly more frequently and cheaply. Okay. What about safety? So these are billions of passenger kilometers, so this is traffic volume, and these are accidents resulting in deaths, so these are deaths from air catastrophes, and well, at the beginning not very many, but there were very many, were fewer flights. Then it started picking up. This is the 50s when it started increasing. We have some, of course, some accidents or some big jumps, but from the 90s, the tendency is to decline. So that means that luckily, flying is in terms, relatives in terms, no? Consider the increase of the number of people that fly, the number of accidents is declining, it's relatively low. What about, this is interesting, what about the duration, duration of a flight? So I always remember, I always forget, this is a Delta flight, this from Atlanta to, I always forget what it is, maybe I've written it. Here? No. This is Orlando JFK, Orlando, New York. This is JFK LA, so Los Angeles. And this is Atlanta, I think it's somewhere in this. I can't find it later. But, well, anyway. If you consider the traveling time between these destinations, you see that it's not improved, it got worse. So it's increased. Now the flights takes longer. Why is it so? Well, flying faster means consuming more energy, more fuel, and fuel, you see. It's very important in the cost. So, like with the Emma Merckx, with the big ship, they don't want to speed up. They don't want to have to speed up, because that means consuming more. So they're not that keen in going as fast as possible. Plus, of course, these traveling times are planned, are regulated. You have to be at the airport at a certain time. And so they want to have some slack time. Slack time means time available to make up in case you have a delay. So if the airplane starts later than expected, 5 minutes, 10 minutes later, then if they have the slack time, they can accelerate, make up for the delay, and arrive at the airport on time. So they don't want to have very tight schedules. Tight schedule means that it's very difficult to make up for possible delays at the landing or at the takeoff. And this is the same. And why is that important to be on time? Of course, it's important to be on time because we are in an hub and spoke system. The airline travel, like the train railway travel, very often works on a hub and spoke network, no system. That means that every spoke has to be at the precise time at the hub. What's the problem at the hub? The problem is the hub, as usual, of course, is congestion. As for trains, like for trains, like for ships, so for airports, the difficult part is handling the node, the hub. Being there, you have to be there at the terminal, at the airport, at the right time. So that means that you want to push. You don't want to have tight schedules. You want to have some slack time in order to that the system becomes more flexible and you are able to reach the destination on time. So planned traveling times actually increased, not by much, but increased over the year. So the more congestion, the more airplanes you have, then it's more unlikely that you are going to have shorter travel times. Okay, that's in terms of the technology and the characteristics of the plane, the organization of the service. What about the markets? What about the airplane markets? Well, as I told you already, airline markets used to be heavily regulated, and now we are also understand why they were heavily regulated. Because, especially at the beginning, they were heavily subsidized. Very few made a profit. They made a profit maybe in the United States, where they have more passengers. In Europe, they usually made a loss. The prices were quite high. Not very many people use the airplanes. So the national monopolies, like the railways, in the 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s, made a loss. That was covered, but subsidized, and was covered by the state budget. Then, what happened? Well, in the United States, 1978, they said, let's deregulate the market. So let's have competition in the market, open up the market. What does it mean have competition in the market? It means that more that you can start your own airline, ask for permission to fly to certain destinations, to land in some airplanes, so have access to the airport, to the terminals, and promote, compete with the established airlines. With established, I would call them, the American name for established airlines or national airlines is legacy airlines. So the legacy airlines are the incumbents, the ones that were there before the revolution. The legacy, okay. Competition means that, well, you have to have access, in order to have competition, you have access to the system. So access to the airports. The sky is not a problem, we are not in a railway system where you have to go on the rail. The sky is, you have more space, routes are not that congested, but the airports are congested. So you have to make space at the airport for another company to run their own business. And at the airport there is congestion, so the space is not that much. So they had to change the rules so that they would reduce the amount of space at the airport allowed to the legacy airlines and make space for the new airlines. Okay. That's the United States, and that's where the all the regulations started, and then the low-cost carriers were introduced and so on. In Europe, of course, we have a different story, but in Europe, with the European market, we had the open skies, European open skies program. European open skies programs means that foreign airlines could land in European, in another airport of another nationality. So, let's say Iberia, right? Iberia, no? Spain. Iberia, of course, could come to Rome, okay? But when? How many times? More and more Iberia was allowed to fly in several airports in Italy. Plus, open sky means also that Iberia could fly, if they want, an airplane from Milan to Rome. So open skies means that any company could organize a service also within any state, any European state. That was the big change. And of course, some routes are profitable because there is a lot of demand. Some routes are not that profitable. For example, if you want to start a service between Trieste and Trapani, well, welcome to Tour. Alitalia has never done it, no? And will never do it, because from Trieste to Trapani, nobody wants to fly. Okay, well, nobody wants to fly. There is not much traveling between Trieste and Trapani. There is more, maybe, between Trieste and Palermo. But Alitalia did it so that in order to go to Palermo, you have to make a stop in Rome. So in an hub and spoke system that makes sense for Alitalia, the hub and spoke system. Okay, you fly to Rome, so everybody goes to Rome, and then from Rome you go to any other destination. So you go to Palermo, you go to Bari, you go to Naples, you go to Sardinia, wherever. So the national airlines had the hub and spoke system. Hub and spoke system means that every destination is reachable, and all the advantages that we spoke about. So larger planes, all the connections, and all. So they said, okay, you are a low-cost company, like you are Ryanair, you want to fly from Trieste to Trapani, okay, you can do it. And in fact, Ryanair organized a flight from Trieste to Trapani, okay. So the deregulation means that you anybody can start any service between countries, European countries, and within European countries. Of course, where's the most profitable route in Italy? The most profitable route used to be Romina, capital cities, main areas. So that's where most of the demand was and most of the profit was. Okay. Then also Europe, 1997, so 20 years later, started deregulating the market. This is Pacific Asia. Pacific Asia was much more regulated. In fact, here it says regulated market with government ownership. So the old models, the controlled state-owned model. But this is rather an old table. This is 2003. Now, also here, the situation is changed. If you read the recent literature on the airline markets, you see that also Asia is copying the model that was first introduced in the United States, then taking up in Europe, and now gradually also moved to Asia. Why is that so? Because deregulation led to many improvements and many advantages. What are the main advantages? The main advantage is lower fares, and more demand. More demand. And in fact, this deregulation decision, political decision, led to the advent of the introduction of the low-cost carriers. You all know about low-cost carriers, so I don't have much to explain. But here, this is a table, I think it's an interesting one. It divides the innovations, the changes, the variations that took place with low-cost carriers between onboard operations, aircraft operations, service networks, and booking. So onboard operations, what is new with onboard operation? Optimum use of seating capacity, often maximum allowed. So low-cost carriers were able to fill up the airports. As I told you, airports were half empty, they were able to fill it up. How do they do it? Price discrimination, the topic that we discuss next. Minimal crew, fewer possible, minimal crew, limited and paying cabin service that we get on the airport, in-plane advertising and merchandise sales, duty-free for okay, we know that. Aircraft operations. Few, often one, types of aircraft used to minimize maintenance cost. So instead of having a variety, few or even one, so specialized in one airplane. Stair boarding instead of sky bridges, so more flexible, faster, no problem everywhere. Any airport can have this as this service. This is more complicated. We know that. Usage of both front and back doors for faster boarding, and the maximal usage of runway length. Take off thrust and braking on landing, fast turnaround to maximize aircraft use. And this is really crucial, fast turnaround. So the airplane lands and takes off, many times of the day. No freight being carried. The big airplanes used to carry not only passengers but also freight. They were not that specialized in passengers. They did both service. maybe air, mail and passengers. High value freight and passengers. These are smaller airplanes, so usually freight as minimum as possible, even as less luggage as possible. Minimum luggage. Service network, well, this is crucial, point-to-point service. So this this business model does not use hub and spoke system. This model is organized for point-to-point service. So it provides one type of service. It's not a substitute for the entire service that is provided by the airline industry from the hub and spoke, but it's point-to-point. Point-to-point, of course, has some advantages and some disadvantages. What is the main advantage of the point-to-point? Point-to-point is flexibility. Hub and spoke is rigid, as we discussed. You have to be there on time, you don't have to miss it, you know, cannot cancel it. With point-to-point, you have maximum flexibility. You don't have demand, you cancel it. You can have a fast turnaround, fast turnaround times. So, yes, you know, you are not in a network. No, you have a point-to-point service. Of course, point-to-point service, smaller airplanes means also shorter range service. So, usually low-cost carriers are not involved in transatlantic long-distance travels. Usually they focus more on short to medium distance service. So they provide another kind of service. Destinations commonly of less than 2 hours, that's it. Less than 2 hours, maybe not only, but commonly it's short. And another crucial aspect of the low-cost carriers business model, the usage of secondary airports. Well, if you are not in hub, what's the point of going to Fiumicino in Italy, or to Malpensa, or going to even Linate in Milano, this high congested airport? No? You go to Bergamo, you go to Brescia, you go to Verona, you go to Treviso, you go to the small airports. No? And what's the advantage of going to the small advantages? Well, the first one we have seen that it's not congested. Second one, you pay lower fees. Airplanes like ships, they pay when they use an airport. Of course, they were willing to pay as less as possible. So smaller airplanes, usually they don't ask you for higher fees. Not only, often they pay you to fly to their airport. Why do they pay you? Because you provide them with a service. Which kind of service? For example, you bring tourists. So, there are many airports in Italy, and I guess also all over the world in Italy, that actually pay Ryanair in order to fly to their airport. One case was Alghero. Ryanair organized a flight from London to Alghero. London. 10 million people, huge market for tourists. Alghero is it's in Sardinia. So Alghero, it's a tourist destination, an attraction. I guess it's 2 hours from London, maybe 2.5. So right there, organized flights and was able to bring millions of people from London to Sardinia, or to South Spain, or whatever. And so they actually were willing to pay Ryanair in order to organize the flight. So Ryanair or the other low-cost carriers, they don't make money only from the passengers, but they make also money from the airports. Plus, they make money from the merchandise and whatnot. So that means that they were able to squeeze the cost of the flight. So to keep fares as low as possible. And many tourist destinations, first thing they do in order to promote their region is to set up agreements with low-cost carriers in order to fly regularly airport, on their airport on these destinations. But secondary airports, small airports, not the main ones. And of course, we all know Booking. Booking is completely changed, no travel agents, less they used to be. So no transaction costs, no travel agents commissions, but you do everything online. And online, well, we are all familiar, we do everything, and you buy online also ancillary services, hotels, car rentals, travel insurance, and so on. Okay, and here, online also, that's very important. You are able also to do the yield management, the revenue maximizing practices that we are going to discuss. So, management, innovation, yield management, and frequent flyer programs. Yield management here is described, but I'll just skip it because maybe I'll come back in a moment and then we'll discuss it on Monday. So, frequent flyer, you know what it is, right? So, the more you fly, then it's a loyalty program. No? The more you fly, the more you have advantages, miles, and discounts of free flights, and so on. And so, what this innovation, this opening up of the market succeeded to do? Well, it succeeded to increase the load factor. Here are the numbers. As I told you, we started with some 60 here, then it dropped down. It dropped down to 50%. So half empty were the airplane. This is United States and this is world. So the world level is less than the United States. And then with the deregulation, with the opening up of the markets, the load factor started increasing and got higher and higher. And in the United States, the average now is 85%. So 85% full. And that's, well, that's a huge number. That's a huge number. And a huge number that means also the more people fly, the cheaper the rates, and so on. So it keeps growing and growing. Here it explains why it is not easy to go over 85%. 85%, it's a very good result. So these are some names of the largest freight airlines. Well, this is not up to date, this is 2013. Well, we all know some of these names. Are these the old names or new names? Are these legacy airlines or the new names? An old name was Pan American, Pan Am. I don't see it here. Another old name, Well, United Airlines, yeah, it's still here. Southwest Airlines, I think this is a low-cost carrier, American low-cost carrier. Delta has been there for at least 30, 40 years. I flew Delta in the 80s. So you have a combination of legacy and newcomers. And of course, we have here Ryanair, that we all know as a newcomer, that has more passengers, carried more passengers than Lufthansa. Where is British Airways? Well, this is passengers carried, this is passenger kilometers. Of course, passengers kilometers is difficult, is different. You don't expect to see low-cost carriers here because they fly short distance. So this is the more traditional, the legacy. British Airways is here. So British Airways is not even among the 10 EasyJet is, and then you have some Asian Chinese. Okay, this is Emirates. So it's the fourth in terms of passenger kilometers. And this is freight. So freight is some freight is something else, it's another market. So freight is carried with some passengers, but also it's carried on specialized cargo aircraft. And here the names are different. FedEx, okay. And Lufthansa, Emirates is also there, so they have also a company with that. Okay. One important aspect of this industry, and this is the result of what I told you so far, is the unstable operating margins. So this is a picture that I got recently. You see how the let's see what it is. So global, this is global. So the margin here is positive, up to 4%, then less than 3%, then it went down. So the 90s, from the 90 to 94, the prices, the margins of these companies went down and became negative up to 8% for, this is an average, for all the airlines, both globally in the United States and in Europe. Why is that so? Why this big loss? I don't know exactly, but probably let's see if it has to do with the 90s, with the price. No, this is not billions. I wanted to see the price. No, I don't see even a price of fuel. So I don't know what exactly what the drop in March. Sorry. So we should check that. Then they went up again. So they have this fluctuation in the 90s. They went up again. And here then what happened here? 9/11, and then 2003, the Iraq War, and there was the SARS. So, financial crisis, political crisis, disease crisis. Now it affected very much the willingness of people to fly, and so it went 2005 to 2007, then 2008, the financial crisis. And so drop, and then up again. And now it's pretty good, but you see that the margin This is the highest in the United States. It's about 8. The global level is 6. European level is more towards 4. The markets are very low. If you average them that out, and if you were in business from the 90s to 2014, you just made it. Maybe you made an average, how much should be? 1%, 2%. That's the margins that you get from running a big, complicated, and risky business as being in America. So, and this is interesting because what we have seen so far is that road transport is very difficult to make profit. Rail transport, just minimal. Just cover the cost. National monopolies just cover the cost. Sea transport, ups and downs, but also there the margins are quite squeezed, quite low. And air transport, again, again the operating margins are very low. So in all these sectors, in all the transport sectors, the profitability is low compared to other industries. In other industries, like in automotive, for example, automotive having a margin of 8%, correct? Am I correct? I was asking Reginald. Yeah, in other industries, 8%, 8-9%, 10% is quite normal. In the transport industry, the margins are low. In fact, this is another graph that shows the operating profit and the net margin. And you see that they go up and down, but in the range, let's say, let's see the net, the in the range between maximum 6 here. And now they are about 2-3%. So the margins are low. So that's why are they low? It's interesting to know that if you look at this is not recent, but I think it's still valid. It's interesting to know that if you look at the supply chain of the airline industry, this is the compagnia aerea, so this is in Italian, so this is the margin of the airlines from 2000 to 2001, from 2005 to 2008. So the airlines have, as we said, a very low margin. If you go to airports, the airports have 25% margin, 30% margin. If you go to the società di leasing, so the companies that lease you the airplane, you have 20-25% margin. Engine producers, 20%. GDS, I can't remember what is GDS, Global Service, I think it's Global Service, it's 10%. These are the producers of the airplanes. They have 10%, 5%. This is travel agencies, very low. And this is the handling. So the companies that do the handling within the airports. In Italy, they used to have 25, and then they have now here it was negative. But what we can notice is in other parts of the supply chain, the margins were much higher than in the airline business itself, the airline operation. So it's the operation that suffers, especially. And other parts suffer much less. Why? Well, of course, always the same answer. Depends on the competition. If you have, if you are in a part of the business highly exposed to competition, like the airlines, then you are exposed to, you have price squeezes and your margins are low. If you are in other parts of the business where you have a monopoly, where do you have a monopoly? Airports, you have an infrastructure, so that's a monopoly. Huh? Well, you compete with other airports, but if you run an airport in a big city, competition is another role. Handling is a monopoly. And also the production of airplanes is not a monopoly, but how many big companies do produce airplanes in the world? We have Boeing, Douglas, and Airbus. So two Americans and one European. So you have a duopoly or more, yeah. So the competition is not that strong as in the airline operation sector as well. So that's one of the reasons why you have so low profit margins. Of course, then you have the open sky regulation, so opening up of the market. As I told you already, in Europe and so on, and this led, according to most literature, this is the one that I quoted here, this led to substantial growth, so improvements, traffic, as we've seen traffic growth, decreased fares, increased load capacity, increased efficiency, and so on. So more links in the network, increased supply, newcomers that enter the market. So a lot of very useful and very important improvements that made flying available and cheap to everybody to more destinations. But of course, it created also problems, especially from for the incumbents, the national monopolies. And these are two slides about Alitalia. So these are Italian slides. This is the Vettori Tradizionali, so the legacy airlines. And this is the low-cost airlines. And here you have a list of the airlines that are considered. And yes, for the Italian low cost, but this is all low cost included. And well, you can see the number of passengers that used legacy airlines, so Alitalia, declined from 73% to 51%, and the number of travelers that use low-cost airlines in Italy increased from 26 to 48%. So the low-cost model, of course, was very, very successful. Very, very successful. This graph, okay. I don't know if this is internal flights. I think this is internal flights, not international. So flights that took place within Italy. Okay, and this is the Italian component. So this is the passeggeri trasportati da un vettore aereo italiano. So these are Italian airlines. So the Italian airlines went from 60%. To 30%. So 70% of the flights that takes place in Italy are actually performed by airlines that are not Italian. So that's the effect of the open sky. Yes, and of course, that this development has led to the Alitalia crisis. We are, I guess, all familiar with that. We read it on the news constantly. The Alitalia model, the name is the monopoly model, lost a lot of money, was covered by subsidies. It received more and more government funds over the years, but were not able to organize a profitable business model. Then in 2014 was sold to Etihad Airlines, that bought 49% of the shares, so not full control, but almost full control of the Alitalia. Why not full? Because they want to have the golden share, to have the control, because it's considered a strategic service. But this not also this new capital and this new linkage between the Alitalia service and the Etihad service, no? Very important United Arab Emirates airline was not successful, was not able to bring money, to bring profits. So last news is that Etihad said we are not prepared to put more money into Alitalia. And so now Alitalia is open for a bit, and so that means that other companies can buy shares and eventually control, change, reorganize the service, change the name and so on. We'll see what happens. Is the Italian case specific or unique? No, not at all, not at all. Over the years, this is the list that I got from the newspaper, over the years, Hungarian Airlines went out of business, 2002, and Ryanair took on most of its services. Czech Airlines were also bought by Korean Air. Olympic Airlines, so the Greek Airlines went also out of business, and they were bought by a conglomerate investment group. Air Portugal also was bought by JetBlue, by another private company. Iberia, Aer Lingus also had problems, and so was acquired, and now I think now is controlled by British Airways. And previously, at the beginning of the Open Skies program, Swiss Air and Austrian Airlines also went out of business and were acquired by Lufthansa. So, big changes, and huge market instability. Huge market instability, is that a problem? Well, it is, no? It is, because we consider flying important, we consider connection, but flying important. We consider jobs important, so this instability in the profits, this instability in the companies that run this business, of course, create problems. And these are the latest news, as you all know. The latest news is also that Ryanair got into troubles. Maybe we'll have some presentations on this, so we'll understand better what's going on on Ryanair, and problems led to the cancellation of several flights across Europe, and so problems with the customers, with the clients. There is an action from the Civil Aviation Association because they say that they did not give accurate information on the of the passengers' rights and so on, about how to get refunds and so on. And the last news is that Ryanair, in retreat, cancels more flights, drops Alitalia a bit. Ryanair said it was interested in acquiring Alitalia, but now it says no, it won't participate in the bid. So we'll see who participates. It seems that there are capitals and companies that want to invest in Alitalia, so to cover this service, but we'll see. So, what's the conclusion? The conclusion is that, yes, very interesting and huge mode of transport. We've seen the beginning, the starting up, the wars, the subsidies, the national monopolies, opening up of a new service, and then the liberalization process that brought many, many advantages. Growing volumes, decreasing prices, satisfying the service. We are going to see also the price discrimination practices that are have been introduced in this service, so the yield management technique, yield revenue. But of course, we should also consider that this is a difficult sector with low and unstable profit margins, and this leads to unstable markets because it's not it's not easy to organize a service that satisfies the needs of the customers and at the same time makes enough profits to last over the years. Yes. So this is it for the airline industry, and maybe I just stop here and